Dr. Arne Buss received an undergraduate degree in psychology at Rutgers University and a PhD from Cornell University. Now, he's been teaching at the undergraduate and graduate level for over 30 years. His passion is facilitating and teaching classes about interpersonal communication. Now, he works with individuals and couples to resolve their interpersonal communication issues. And in the past 7 years, he's given presentations on interpersonal communication skills to a number of organizations in the Monterey area. He joins us with his segment, Speaking of Listening, on the second Monday of each month. So let's listen to this musical introduction, followed by Dr. Arne Buss and Speaking of Listening.
Listen to the song here in my heart, a melody I start but can't complete. Listen to the sound from deep within. It's only beginning to find relief.
Yes, and welcome to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio. As Solazar said, I'm your host for this segment, Arne Buss. Speaking of Listening is about ways of improving every relationship by listening from your aware heart. And I'll be giving workshops on effective communication and relationship building. And to find out more information, you can look at my website, which is www.consciousawareheart.com, Conscious Aware Heart, all one word. Or email me there, ahbuss, A-H-B-U-S-S, at consciousawareheart.com. Now, listening, as you're no doubt perhaps getting tired of me saying, is not just about hearing the words the other person is saying. It's much more than that. It's identifying what the message is being sent. And today we're going to get into that a little bit. I have a number of things I'm going to talk about today. The first is I'm going to talk about what I call Newton's three laws of relationships. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about a key element of being an effective listener, and that has to do with getting okay with yourself. And that leads into a little bit of discussion about what the inner critic is about. The approach that I advocate for being the most effective listener possible is something called tracking, and I'll talk about when tracking is a valuable thing to do and how it can help uncover that hidden message that is so important in communication. So what I like to call Newton's three laws of relationships. Now, if you remember back to your high school physics days, Newton, the Isaac Newton, the famous one, wrote down three laws of motion that were very effective in describing things from just how stuff moves to where planets are going to be, and we have an eclipse coming up, and using the kind of physics that that ultimately was derived from what Newton said, we're able to do things like predict the eclipse. So his first law of motion was that something in motion is going to stay in motion as long as there are no external forces operating on it. Now, the laws of relationship were a different Newton. That's Ishmael Newton, who's a butcher in the Bronx. But his first law of relationships, which is corresponds, is basically if you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to keep getting what you've always got. So just like something that keeps moving as long as they're in the same direction, if nothing changes, then nothing changes. So that's the first law of relationship. Newton's second law has to do with, talks about the force, like if something is moving and it encounters another object. And the force is equal to mass times acceleration, if you remember. And that's Isaac Newton's second law. Ishmael Newton's second law of relationship is the acceleration of an argument is directly proportional to the emotions involved and inversely proportional to the degree of communication skills. That's a good one. The acceleration of an argument is directly proportional to the emotions involved. So when emotions get involved in an argument, then it just goes off the rails very quickly. And inversely proportional to the degree of communication skills. So if there are no communication skills, or the communication skills are very low, then an argument can just very quickly go off the rails. And then finally, Newton's third law was that for every force operating, there's an equal and opposite force. And the third law of relationship has to do with advice. And that is, for every piece of relationship advice, there's an equal and opposite piece of advice. In other words, be careful of where you get advice and be careful of how you give advice. So maybe you're thinking, well, okay, that's fine and good, and I can relate to each of those three laws in places where things have not gone so well, but what can I do instead? Well, since you asked, what to do instead? If you keep doing what you've always done and you keep getting what you always got, then do something different. Now, what can I do different, you're thinking? Well, one thing is to become a more effective communicator. To become a more effective listener, the best way I know how is to learn how to track. And if you've heard some of my other segments, I've talked about some of the mechanisms of tracking. I will touch on some of them again in this segment, but go to the other ones. They're all on the website that I mentioned, and look at some of the past segments that talk specifically about tracking. And in future segments, I'm going to get more into some details of that. But learning how to track and what that's about is probably the most effective thing that you can do to stop getting what you've always gotten. Understand, too, that you can't change the other person. The only one you can change is yourself. And what does that mean? That means that you can change your reactions to responses. You can change that fight or flight that you get into moving into your aware heart, where you see the other person as okay and you see yourself as okay. And that leads to what you can do to overcome the second law of relationship, and that is to move from the emotions and the feelings that drive you into this fight or flight and move into your aware heart. And that's something akin to being mindful or conscious or being in the present, because in the present moment, there is nothing wrong. There is nothing that can happen. Everything is in the now. I saw an amusing clock face that had at each of the spots on the dial, it said now. It's always now, 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 now. And that's what being in your aware heart is about. And there are many other ways of describing it, being mindful, being in the present moment. But for me, I like to talk about the aware heart because that is a place where we keep ourselves okay and we see the other person as okay. And that doesn't mean that we have to accept unacceptable behavior. But it means that we see the other person as being an inherently valuable person just for being a person. In other words, every person has inherent value and worth. And that's easy to say, and especially in heated moments, it can be very hard to do. It can be quite a challenge. And the thing is that if we see somebody else as not okay, then that really is more about ourselves than the other person. You know, you've heard the expression that when you point the finger, that there are three fingers pointed back. So that's why I always make a habit of pointing with all five of my fingers in the same direction. So I, but that's just kind of being flippant with it. You know, the idea behind that saying is that when we see another person as not being okay, when we see the person as not being okay, then that really is a reflection on how we're seeing ourselves as not okay. So listening to yourself, to be mindful of what is going on with you, and distinguishing between your what your true nature is, the essence, your being, and that inner critic. And the beauty of that is that that then opens our heart to be able to accept advice graciously, even when it's unsolicited, and choose whether or not to follow it according to our highest self, according to our aware heart. Because sometimes somebody else can see something that we may not be aware of. And it's hard. We get defensive. We tend to resist advice when no matter how well-intended it may be, especially if it comes across as criticism. And in general, advice is something that is best avoided. I have a few sayings on advice that I found to be fairly useful. The first one is from Harry Truman, and he said that, "I have found the best way to give advice to your children is to find out what they want and then advise them to do it." So in other words, that's not really offering advice. It's basically telling someone what they already want. Erica Jong once said, "Advice is what we ask for when we already know the answer but wish we didn't." In other words, even if somebody's asking for advice, they're really not looking for real input. They're actually just kind of hoping that they won't have to make the decision that they're, you know, the choice that they're going to have to make. One interesting thing from a 17th century writer named François de la Rochefoucauld, I'm mangling that, apologies to my French listeners, but he said back in the 17th century, old people like to give good advice as consolation for the fact that they can no longer set bad examples. I thought that was kind of amusing. And then one anonymous saying about advice was about Socrates, Socrates was a Greek philosopher who went around giving people good advice. They poisoned him. And finally, the Marquis de Lagrange, an 18th century statesman, said, "When we ask for advice, we're usually looking for an accomplice." In other words, basically, advice is, even when being asked for, can be a trap. It can be a trap. Because most of the time, we really kind of know what's up. But we wish we didn't. We wish that things were different than they really were, in a way. I've heard resentment being described as wishing that the past was better than it really was. So we all have flights of fancy where we don't see things for how they really are. And, you know, it's not that that's a good or a bad thing. Sometimes it can be effective and that just it helps us get through the day without kind of descending into being morose. But generally, having a more realistic view of how things are going tends to make things go better. And, you know, the thing is, especially in this day of fake news and, you know, people just kind of disagreeing about what in past times were basic facts, that can be a bit of a challenge. And, you know, especially in light of some of the recent racist demonstrations and violence that's been committed, which is a very sad throwback to a time when such things were acceptable. Even in the face of that, it's not that has to be accepted. But in not accepting the unacceptable does not mean that the humanity of anybody be abrogated. Again, it's one thing to be so clear and in your heart and to condemn what's not acceptable, you know, the violence, bigotry, racism. And it's another thing to get wound up in it. And that has to do with getting okay with yourself. If you're getting upset, then that means that there's something about yourself that's not okay. Because all reactivity comes from a place inside ourselves that we're not okay with, all of it. And when you see or hear something that triggers you, it points to an unhealed wound that you have, not the other person. All they've done is just trigger it, stimulate it. Because when we see something or hear something that's not, that just has a charge for us, you know, we have this fight or flight reaction. And that's our reptilian brain going on. That's not our higher mental processes. That doesn't help the relationship or the person or anything. And if you want to heal your relationship, begin by accepting yourself as being okay. And understand that if the other person says or does something that wounds or triggers, that's pointing to your wound. That's pointing to they didn't do it. The chances are that wound came from a place in your childhood when this person wasn't even around. And so it turns out that most of the criticism doesn't come from the others, but from ourselves. And what's important about that is that if you hear criticism, then recognize that that's coming from a place in the other person where they're not okay with ourselves. You know, you've heard love your neighbor as yourself. But what if you don't love yourself? So if I hate myself, is it okay if I hate my neighbor? Well, it's generally better to turn that around. But understand that I can only love you, I can only accept you to the extent that I love and accept myself. So if I see myself as acceptable, as lovable, as inherently worthy, then I can see you as acceptable and okay and inherently worthy. But if I see myself as not okay, if I see myself as unworthy, then I see you as being unworthy. Or I'll try to make myself feel more worthy by ineffectively getting you or someone else to do something to make me feel better. Or I might turn to drugs or alcohol or some external stimulus to make myself feel better. And of course, it never works. So the starting place is to go inside and make sure that you're okay with yourself. Which leads to the inner critic. You see, when we grow up and become socialized, we develop a conscience. You know, and that's generally a good thing. It's essential if we're not going to be a sociopath to having, you know, values and morals, to be able to distinguish right from wrong, acceptable from unacceptable behavior. The problem is that no matter how loving and effective a parent does that, most children internalize it as them not being okay. And that's what becomes the inner critic or the judge. And that inner critic gets inside of us. And again, it's an essential part of our socialization. It's, you know, without a conscience, you have things like, you know, mass murderers or people promulgating Holocausts and things like that. So it's absolutely essential that we develop that, and most people do when we're growing up. But what comes with it is that inner critic, and that inner critic can be so insidious, because it knows everything that you know, and will mercilessly attack you. The chances are that you have one, and if you think you don't, then the chances are that you have a very sneaky one. At least in my case, I was unaware of this until I began working with it. And the first important step is to bring it into consciousness. What can be valuable there are the things that trigger emotional reactions, or all allow us to bring that inner critic into consciousness. And what it requires is going inside and kind of just trying to listen to that voice. Many times that voice sounds like a parent or a caregiver who's blamed us or shamed us or done all of the things that are necessary to socialize a child. Although the people who I respect often say that it's entirely possible to raise a child without blaming or shaming them. And I believe that that's true. And yet for most of us, that wasn't the case. And even if our parents are able to do it, as soon as we start encountering others, especially in the schoolyard, it just all goes to hell in a handbasket, basically. But a way to work with the inner critic is that the first step is to bring it into consciousness. And it's important to not fight it so much. But sometimes one effective thing, especially if you have a very nasty one, is to just kind of scream at it. That works for a while. So if you sort of yell at it to shut up or even worse. Ultimately, what's helpful is to be inquisitive. In fact, I was speaking with somebody who had a wonderful exercise using both hands, like to write with it. When you write things with the non-dominant hand, that's kind of the unconscious, and then to respond with the other hand, with the dominant hand. So there's almost this internal dialogue between the unconscious part and the conscious part, and writing with your non-dominant hand is a way, even though it can be very frustrating and come out all kinds of messy and things, but it can be very valuable in terms of uncovering some of these unconscious things. So I am convinced that all reactivity is indeed a result of the inner critic getting triggered. Now there are books on this, and you know, if you Google the inner critic, you can find all kinds of resources on that. But I want to finish by talking about how to decode the hidden message, and that's through tracking. Now, see, there's always a hidden message. Just for example, in the aftermath of the terrible violence in Charlottesville over the weekend, the president came out with a statement where he basically said, "Well, there's violence on everybody's part," on the face of it, that's not entirely unreasonable. And yet, what was the message? In this case, there was only one side that was committing the violence. And so there was a hidden message in there, and I think people definitely picked up on it. The hidden message was, well, you know, everybody does it, so, you know, so I'm not gonna condemn a one particular group. I'm just gonna kind of say everybody does it. That was the hidden message, and I believe that was accurately identified. Now, hopefully, you're in a relationship that's a little bit more heart-centered. However, what often happens is the other person, and again, by relationship, I don't necessarily mean an intimate relationship. It could be a friendship, it could be an acquaintance, a colleague, an employer, employee. But somebody will say something that has a charge. And in this particular case, in the particular case of what you're hearing, you know, I mean, I'm like, you know, can you believe what happened at work today? Or can you believe Joe? You know, something like that. When they send a message that something is not okay and there's some kind of a charge, then that's when you track. And by track, I mean to listen from the heart. Now, sometimes the message can be nonverbal. I mean, have you ever dealt with a teenager who just wouldn't talk? Well, you can track the silence. What did you do in school today? Nothing. Well, now that in other segments, I'll talk about how questions can be entrapping and how when you ask questions like that, you're almost setting yourself up to hear, you know, something like nothing. You know, how was work? Fine. So when you hear feelings being expressed, though, then you can track. When you hear criticism, whether it's a criticism of you or of someone else, then track. And you don't want to get into playing "Ain't They Awful." See, so when somebody, you know, what do we do instead? Well, we might ignore it. We might offer sympathy. We might say, yeah, aren't they terrible? Or if we hear an unclear message and we think we know what the other person means, you know, we might say something. Oh, I understand. I know just how you feel. Oh, yeah, that's I know. And the fact is, you don't know how they feel. And most people, when they hear, oh, I know just how you feel, they're at least thinking, no, you don't. You don't know how I feel. So we judge and we make wrong and we offer sympathy instead of empathy. Or if we feel criticized, we, you know, we'll defend, we'll justify, we'll explain, we'll take it on, or we'll play the victim. And none of those are particularly effective. So there's a hidden message, and tracking helps us get to what that hidden message is. Now, sometimes the message is perfectly clear. You know, most information statements are you know, don't need to be tracked. You know, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. No, I might say, okay, let's, you know, three blocks and make a left, you know. But often, especially in relationships, the message is typically not in the words, but, you know, it's hidden and coded. You know, have you ever experienced, you know, if you're getting nonverbal vibes from the other person that something is not okay, and you say, are you okay? You say, I'm fine. Is anything wrong? Nothing. Well, see, the words are not what are communicating the message. The message is hidden in there. Or you might hear exaggerations like, you know, you're always late. And on the face of it, you know, an always statement is always not completely true, at least almost always. So if you say you're always late and you've ever been on time once, then that statement is logically false, because you weren't always late. You were late a few times. But that's not really how people use those words. And they are operative words. Like when you hear always or never, that should be a clue that you should begin tracking. See, what they really mean, it's an idiom. And you're always late doesn't mean that you're literally always late. It means that you're late more often than I feel comfortable with. And in decoding that, rather than arguing about, well, it's not always or it's not never, then you can get to the heart of what the problem is and then move to a resolution. Track the feelings. And the thing with feelings, you have to be a little careful. And I generally recommend tracking with the most gentle form of them and let the speaker kind of correct. So, for example, you know, I might say, you know, so something happened that troubled you. And, you know, they might say, troubled? You know, I was furious. Ah, you know, so then it was completely unacceptable to you. Again, let them lead. You want to be careful not to be mind reading. One indication of that is if you hear someone say, well, don't tell me how I feel. Well, that's an indication that maybe you've gone too far, even if it's accurate. So, for example, if somebody's obviously angry, don't say you're angry. Never tell an angry person that they're angry. That's which is, I'm amused by that. But the fact is that an angry person will not own up to the fact that they're angry, at least in that moment. I'm not angry. So you want to find other ways and not to just focus on that. Focus on what their anger is directed at. And use some other words to describe that. And sometimes, if a person gets stuck, you can use a gentle challenge, which I've talked about in other segments. And just the operative word is gentle, not challenge. And the thing is that sometimes you see somebody circling around and circling and circling, and the gentle challenge helps break them out of that. But the key is to not make them wrong. You know, and sometimes the key to a gentle challenge is kind of the opposite. You know, so if they're complaining about something and complaining, you know, you might say, well, you know, so you feel you have no choice. Or so you're somehow okay if that keeps happening. Or maybe something, you know, so you're going to find it hard to confront your boss about this. Or so you've tried everything and nothing has worked. And those are all gentle challenges. And they help the speaker understand and realize the kind of hidden messages that they've been sending. So we've reached the end of another Speaking of Listening segment. I so appreciate your being here with me and listening to this. I've talked about Newton's three laws of relationships and how getting okay with yourself, dealing with your inner critic, and how to track to find what the hidden message is. These are all so valuable, and I encourage you to not just take my word for it, but test this out. Try it yourself. See whether it works for you. And until then, you have been listening to Speaking of Listening on Wood Vibrations Radio. I have been your host, Arnie Buss. I am so grateful for you joining me today. You can listen to Speaking of Listening every second Monday at 5 o'clock right here on Good Vibrations Radio. To learn more about effective listening, you can contact me on my website, www.consciousawareheart.com, all one word. My email at ahbuss@consciousawareheart.com, again, all one word. On Facebook, I'm at AwareHeart, and on Twitter at Effect5Comm. That's Effect, the number 5, C-O-M-M. And until next time, remember, listen from your heart.
You should have listened. There is someone here inside, someone I thought had died so long. go.